It's my pleasure to introduce to you Stevan Gates. Actually, Stevan and I go back a long time together. We knew each other in seventh grade and spent a lot of time skiing together. And I'm delighted that Stevan would step in today and actually talk a little bit about his annual review process. I think he has developed an annual review process that oftentimes in the business it goes overlooked. And the annual review process is sometimes, at least from my experience, that agents don't really faithfully go through and do annual reviews. Maybe a little bit different on the planning side, but Stevan's going to talk to us about some ideas that he has implemented on that side of it to do annual reviews. Just a little bit of background on him. He's with Lincoln Financial, been with Lincoln Financial for now about 16 years. Has been recognized as one of their top advisors, I think, 5 out of the last 7 years. I think has really done some remarkable things. Another common friend of Stevan's and I is a guy named Todd Anderson. And Todd and Stevan worked together and really built what I would call the premier financial planning practice here in the Intermountain area. So we're delighted to have Stevan here. Thanks for coming today. We'll turn the time over to Stevan.
Thanks, Chris. Chris is a graduate down here at BYU and got his master's in taxation and a CPA. And so I've had high regard for Chris and seen his success. So a compliment from Chris means a lot to me. Thanks, Chris. My topic is annual reviews. Seems kind of boring, but there's a heck of a lot of money made in doing good annual reviews. I find that a lot of our peers make a lot of money. What I find is they work really hard, and as the clients come in year after year, they fall off the back and they lose these clients 4 and 5 years later. And these are great clients. And I'm finding they're just starting over the practices year after year after year. And I find that a lot of these clients that they lose were very affluent. And so I saw, after beating my head against the wall and, you know, having to get new clients because I neglected my clients, they fall off the wagon 4 or 5 and 6 years later, that I got to have an annual review process, because I'm holding myself out to say, here's what I'm going to do, here's what we're going to do together, and here's what I can do for you. And I end up delivering, but really I don't deliver, because everybody's got to say, I got to make more money with the new client, so therefore I kind of got to neglect him because I got to go with somebody else. And what I found, that if you're working with people that are affluent, they can be affluent by income. If they're making $150,000 or more, they're considered affluent. If they're business owners, they're considered affluent. In our world, an affluent individual has $1 million net worth, $200,000 of income, and there's a whole lot on the Wasatch front that fit that criteria, a lot of affluent clients. So here's why you need to have a good annual review process. A, because it pays a lot of money. It makes you a lot of money. In fact, 3/4 of my GDC or my target or GDC, the same thing essentially, comes from my current clients and doing really good annual reviews. I didn't know that. I just went out and got a new client. Okay, so having a great annual review process is huge. And what I'm gonna give you something. This is a bonus, but here you go, Chris. I'm going to spend about 10 minutes really quick on this. I'm going to give you a sample of one of my annual reviews, but here's the process. The first page you're looking at there is the outline of my annual review process. So look at the very bottom says benefits. Here's why I have a good annual review process, because it's a platform to deliver marketing, positioning, and promises. It's a process that supports your assets under management. Should be common there, loyalty, goodwill, fees, and or planning a renewal fees. You have a good annual review process because it provides clarity, simplicity, control, and it's great anticipation for me as an advisor, knowing that I've got 10 people I'm gonna see this month, or 9 people, or 8 people I'm gonna see this month, and I know there are gonna be 10 more next month. These are affluent clients. My staff, my team knows that I've got these meetings and these clients that are upcoming, and they know what they're going to be doing. to get them in and get prepared for those meetings. So I'm spreading out the work for me as an advisor over the year, and I'm spreading out the work for my team. It allows me to keep promises. It engenders loyalty for my clients. And I also maintain those assets under management. I'm more referable for preferred introductions. I'm setting the stage for next level planning, new strategies, new GDC. It's a consistency of experience for my clients and for me as a professional and for my team. And you know what? My A game is always getting better because I'm not doing something different. Oh, I got somebody. What do? I know what I'm doing. I'm becoming an expert at my craft. And my A game is always getting better every single year. And you know what happens when you have a good annual review process? You stay in compliance too. Because can you imagine building up this practice and this business like a doctor or a CPA or attorney, and all of a sudden stuff happens. I mean, you know, stuff happens. Things happen out of our control. People get mad and they sue. And you know, you have this great practice, build it up. Next thing you know, you did something unintentionally out of compliance. And I've got, of the 15 years that I've been in the business, there's probably 7 of my closest peers are out of the business because they were not compliant. Now, they didn't say illegal. They just were out of compliance. Now, some of them are still in the business, but it is such a devastating thing to a practice when you get terminated from your broker-dealer because of compliance problems. To try to go and restart a practice in a terminated type of a status is a big deal. So it can knock you out of your saddle financially. So that's why I have a good annual review process. So here's what I've done. Let me spend 5 more minutes, go back to the second page. I take all my top 50 or 75 clients, this is my top 75 clients, and I lay them out over the year, January through December, okay? And these are just, I deleted all my clients, obviously reasons. I don't want you to see who my clients are. But this letter represents, so say that in January I had my top 5 clients. These are the January clients that are coming in. The February clients are coming in. And you know what? All of them received a letter in January, which is the next page, that says, hey, thank you for your trust and confidence. I'm going to have an annual review with you. It's going to be in the month of X. And oh, by the way, if you have any questions, give me a call ahead of time. And this is what we'll be talking about. So they're going to get this letter. So they know when I'm going to see them. Guess what happens if their annual review is in the month of March? In the month of February, or the month before, they get another letter that says, as we told you out in January, your review will be in March. So could you start collecting these documents and send it in? And oh, by the way, will you fill out this little survey? And you see this little wealth survey, which is 4 pages in, it looks like this. Will you just fill out this survey and send it back to me prior to our annual review so I'm prepared when you come in so that we kind of hit the ground running? Okay? So they know in January they're going to have an annual review, all my clients. Do you know what the pressure that, you know what that did for me the first time I did this when I sent letters to 80% of my revenues comes from 50 people, 80%. I've got 400 and something clients. I have to neglect my B and C clients, but my top 50, when I sent a letter out to them, and they knew when I was gonna see them, so they knew, hey, he's gonna see me. And so if they ever called me and says, what's up? I says, well, we're gonna talk about it. Your review time month is April or March or February, whatever it is, or September. So I knew that they knew when I was going to call them. They knew that I cared. I sent them a survey. And oh, by the way, every single month they got a newsletter, an electronic newsletter that goes out to them. And a lot of times I'll get the survey back really quick. And obviously if there's something that's on there I think it's time sensitive, I'll give them a call. And you know, I'll have them in next month and change it from the month that I had them if I needed to. But you know the pressure that took off me when I took my top 80% of my revenue, and this could apply to insurance business as well as an investment business, okay? It doesn't matter. Mine happens to be based primarily on assets under management. I do a lot of insurance. I probably did about 10 insurance cases, but they're big insurance policies related to either succession planning or estate planning, or that's pretty much the two main insurances I do. So, but it applies to an insurance practice or assets under management practice. So it was so relieving to lay it out on the calendar. First, I segmented my clients. You've all done this, A, B, and C clients, segmented based on revenue opportunities. And as we all know, it's still 80-20, 20% of our clients is where 80% of our revenues come from. And they get the letter, and then you see this, my client communication. I know that in the month following the quarters is when they get most of the stuff. You know, it's the quarterly statement. It's the market analysis, or the market, you know, how's the market doing? It's my phone call. And so every month they get my electronic newsletter. Every quarter they get a quarterly consolidated report. And then every month, the next month's clients are coming in, get that letter. So you can kind of get a sense that, okay, this guy's organized. Well, I'll tell you what, I don't do any of this stuff. I pay an assistant who just, she owns this, it's her baby, I created it, she owns it, it's her responsibility, she gets paid X, $17 an hour plus salary, and then she gets bonuses based on this being implemented successfully. No bonus if it's not implemented properly. And there's metrics that we create. I've done non-Lincoln and Lincoln, and Lincoln happens to have been my favorite. It's not Lincoln. I think it's part of Emerald Publications is actually does it. But it looks like it's our logo. It looks like it's generated by me. It has my mug on it. And we look real brilliant. You know, I don't write. Yep. Okay. Which is another point. All this stuff that I'm showing you, I do zero. I do probably 5% of it. It is on autopilot. It's set up. I just show up at my desk every week, and my assistant says, here's what you're doing this week, here's coming in, here's what I think you want, is there anything else you want? And I debrief the case, say, oh yeah, by the way, I can see I need to do this next level planning, this next level of whatever, I need to move this assets, I need to talk about the market, new allocation, a new strategy. And so this has brought me tremendous peace of mind, this process of calendaring them, notifying them when they're coming in, knowing that when they're going to be communicated with. They have a survey, and they sent it back. Not everybody sends it back, and if they don't send it back, my assistant reminds them the month before to bring in. If they say, what, and we send it back out to them. If they completely forgot about it, the first 2 minutes of the meeting, as they're sitting in the conference room, we set the survey down in front of them, and we have them fill that out really quick, okay? So in this strategic coach, which some of you heard of before, how many of you are familiar with the E-Myth? What's the famous line? If it's a problem, make it a process. Okay? Most of the guys and gals in this business are challenged with tangents because we have ADD or ADHD, or we're scattered because our business, you could be sitting at your desk doing very compliant things, serve your clients, doing proper education, doing all the right stuff, and go out of business and not make a dime. So you got to have a system and a process in place. And so this is what was my answer years ago. I said, listen, I am tired of running on, trying to start over doing something completely different than for the next client. I'm creating this. My assistant and our team will run it. And I'm going to do what I do best, which is my unique ability, which is developing relationships, opening cases and closing cases, and making connections. That's what I do. She does all this. I literally don't do this. I just created it. She runs it. I just come in there and do my magic. Okay? And like I said, 3/4 of my GDC or my target premium will come from my current clients. And let me show you something. Here's a little bonus I'll give you. This is a really cool deal. I've been doing this now for a year. I learned this. See on my calendar here? See halfway down in each month where it says 5 marketing questions / lunch? Here's what I'll do. So those people I saw in January for my annual review, in June, I will meet with those 5 or 6 or 7 my top clients. I'll go buy some sandwiches. I say, hey, I want to come over and have I'm going to come and meet your office. What type of sandwich you like? Can you give me 20 minutes, even 15 minutes, 30 minutes? They all do it. Guess what I do? Go to the very back page, 5 marketing questions. This is some powerful stuff right here. I'm telling you, this will be a great experience or not a very good experience. But if it's not a good experience, you're going to do some things different because of what you hear. So when I go to, I have the annual review, those in January. I meet these same people in June. One's in February, I meet those in July. March, meet those for lunch and sandwiches. Here's the 5 questions. I say, hey, listen, I'm working with a marketing consultant that's helped me be able to better my practice and be able to serve you better. I want to come ask you 5 questions. They say, sure. So I sit down with them and say, hey, Chris, let me ask you something. How would you explain to somebody what I do? So I'm sitting down with my client, Chris. We're having lunch. We're talking. Chris, I'm just curious. As I told you on the phone, I wanted to ask you some 5 questions because there's this marketing consultant that's helped me and helped me better my practice and serve others, and including you. So I can ask you 5 questions, all right? Great. Chris, how would you describe what I do to others? How would you describe to somebody else what I do? I'm curious.
Well, you've helped me gain a lot of financial peace of mind.
Okay.
You've helped me solve a lot of my problems and helped me sleep better at night.
Excellent, thanks. Let me pause here. Let me tell you what you hear some crazy things. You hear some things that are really, you know, I think, you know what? What you really quickly realize is I'm glad he's not telling his buddy to see me because that's not really what I do. You know, or you're thinking, you know, you realize no wonder he's not referring to me because of what he just said I do. You know, and so all of a sudden you realize really quick what they think of you and how they would describe you to a client. So what's the solution to that? Maybe if that made another follow-up. Say, you know, you give them exactly the line what they say. Chris, could you refer me to your partner here? And here's what I want you to do. Just say, hey, listen, this guy's done this. I'm gonna refer a buddy to you. You gotta just sit down with him. He's done a lot of things for me. I know you've probably done it all, but you just gotta meet with this guy. So you tell him what you do that he's gonna say to somebody else. Okay? Chris, let me ask you another one. What are the problems I've helped you solve? Now, you don't need to answer that, but all of a sudden it's fascinating what they tell you, what you thought you've done for them, and what they tell you you've done for them are 2 different things. And all of a sudden you realize, I'm not very good at communicating, or I need to remind them of what I've done, which is very profound. I mean, very profound. Talking millions of dollars or thousands of dollars or eliminated or totally took risk off their plate. And I'm going to spend a whole lot more time because I'm going to be in my presentation. This is bonus stuff I'm giving you guys here. What have been the benefit, Chris, what have been the benefits to you of me helping you solve your problems? Another question. Now, the 4th one is, what skills and abilities do you think is most valuable that I have to you, Chris? What skills have been most valuable to you of my skills? And he'll tell you, you know what? You'll feel really good. This is a nice thing. But all of a sudden, guess what is what's happening because of these questions? He's all of a sudden becoming crystal clear in his mind. Oh my gosh. Wow. Stevan is like really valuable to me. And then when you start asking, you know, Chris, who do you think ought to, you know, I'm just curious. I'm going to, maybe not today, but it may be in a week, but what if you ask him, say, who's 3 guys I should be talking with? Well, after you've asked these questions and you've crystallized in his mind, he's told you, this is what you've done for me. This is how I would describe you. Here's my favorite skills and abilities you have. It's clear in his mind. And so how much easier is it going to be for him to refer you to 1 or 2 or 3 of his affluent dudes, buddies? Chris, what do I need to know about you so that in the future I can be more of a resource? And he's going to say, well, gosh, glad you asked. I'm separated, looking for probably a divorce, or I think I'm going to inherit some money, or I'm going to buy a building, or I mean, just something. And all of a sudden, either nothing happens, or he says, just keep staying in touch with me. Keep doing what you're doing, or he'll bring up something that's really serious in nature that you're really going to be able to help them. So, this is in my calendar, and do you think I build up my emotional bank account, our relationship bank account, when I'm coming over to him, and I value him? And who doesn't want to? I mean, you know, I just, I had a kid that just got off of mission. He said, hey, could I come over and visit with you? I just want to ask you some questions. It made me feel like I was some smart guy, and like I'm, you know, have some wisdom. Well, anybody will do it. Well, that's really what you're doing, and not, and so it makes them feel good, and you know what? A lot of stuff is revealed and enhances the relationship, and no question, it's a layup for getting preferred introductions, and it solidifies loyalty. So before I exit this, you can see when you have laid out who you're, segmented your clients, put them on the calendar, sent them a letter, sent them a survey, going out and have lunch with them, and I'm going to show you with my annual review, and this is an annual review based on where I, you know, manage a tremendous amount of money. So this is really based on that. But I also probably a lot of this, I've done some comprehensive planning with a lot of them. And so a lot of that stuff has been done. And now the biggest thing on the client's mind, after we've, you know, titled everything correctly, got everything owned properly, got the correct insurances, the correct beneficiaries, and the asset protection strategies, then the ongoing revenue that comes in on the assets under management is really what this is about. Okay, applies in insurance too. So I'm going to get. I'll let you. Anybody who wants to have this presentation, it's not going to be on the Taggart website, but these are the. There's a number of different platforms. I always talk about a brief discussion on the investment policy statement, ELSPT, which is really. I talk about our philosophy of managing money, their accounts, and the location of their investments. The allocation, Efficient Frontier, Monte Carlo. When Monte Carlo is there, most people know what I say when I say Monte Carlo. Okay. Their performance, or the exact platform that they're in, whether it's whatever platform, and then the OmniSource, which is their performance. So all my reviews, I talk about their investment policy, their allocation, asset location, from Efficient Frontier, Monte Carlo, the platform they're in, and the performance. But in terms of priority, what is most important during a review? Most people go right to here. What's my rate of return? In our world, in our corporation, we spend very little time on here. Why? Not because we're afraid of it or we want to avoid it, but when you develop if your model is based on how your rate of return is doing, what happens in years when you're not doing well, which is, you know, can be often, then they're going to fire you. So you can't base your proposition on beating this S&P 500, which a lot of times you will. So you got to base it on, okay, what is the guy's objectives? What is the family's objectives? What is the client's objectives? The objectives is, I have this much money, let's say $2 million, I don't want to lose it. I want to retire in 5 years, and I want to have $100,000 of income, and I want to never run out, and I want to make sure we got inflation built in there, and I want to have $100,000 after taxes. So their objective is to have $100,000 of income and never run out of money. If it's better than that, great, but it can't be worse than that. That's the objective. Well, that's what we're building our plan on, is the objective. How much money do I have, and where is it at? That's a big thing that we think is important to them. How are my assets allocated? Is my portfolio optimized? What's the probability of success? And there's what's my rate of return, and how do I compare with my benchmark? Okay. So we have different technology that gives us the answers to all these. Here's the pyramid I just went over with you. So there's this part of the platform answers the questions. What are my objectives? That's your statement of investment policy. This tool answers these questions. This tool answers what's my rate of return, et cetera. But these tools doesn't have to be our company, but wherever you're at, you need to be able to answer these questions for the client. There's three things that we've been taught by a guy by the name of Tim Johnson, who I have found over the years has been very accurate and right and has a tremendous amount of credibility, and that is investors should be compensated for the risk that they assume. Investors should be positioned for a reasonable probability of success relative to their goals. Prudent investors should not be exposed to potentially avoidable catastrophic risks. So here's an example of a client, $5.2 million, just shows the tax status, the value, and how it's owned. Here's their asset allocation. And we always like to talk about long-term rates of return over a 10-year time period. Estimated annual rate of return on a portfolio, this is a balanced portfolio, 6.5%. There's the risk or standard deviation, 7.7. So the clients want to know, how does it look on a pie chart? Here's the allocation. That's important to them. Here's the asset location. Why is asset location important?
Taxability.
There you go. It's from a CPA. Taxability. Some accounts should not be in an account that's generating a lot of income, and their high income tax bracket should not be in a tax deferred or a tax free scenario. And for liquidity, it's exactly right. So it's fascinating to clients. Here's the accounts, all the accounts. Here's the cash they have in those accounts. Here's the cash in treasuries, intermediate bonds, long bonds, etc. All the way over here. This particular client, we didn't have private equity because it was a retired client and a non-sophisticated client. Private equity sometimes is above their complexity or tolerance index. So we show them, here's the part they have taxable, tax deferred or tax exempt, the total amount. And then this is a page that we this is a number of pages. I only got one sample page here, but this is where we do the breakdown. Here's of all the different assets. Here's what you have in cash, and the different positions. And we go through all. This could be like 5 or 6 pages. But what we find is we find stock overlap, or we find over concentrated position. And the reason why we don't get into this is it really doesn't matter to us. Too much. We just want to be able to know what that is, so if we do have over-concentrated stock or stock overlap. But also we see, you know, what do they have that are ETFs, individual securities, or mutual funds. This is how it's identified. What style are they? Are they slant towards large growth or value? Mid, on the value or the growth side, et cetera. What's their tilt? Also, how does their portfolio compare to the S&P 500? You know, why are they blue as them? Why are they over-allocated in industrials? Why are they under-allocated in consumer goods? Well, it's comforting for a client to know that his portfolio somewhat resembles the S&P 500. It helps us understand balance, help us understand their benchmark. But a picture paints 1,000 words a lot of times. This is another one of those examples. Same thing with the bonds. I'm not going to spend time here. What quality of the bonds, how much is in fixed, and then the quality of those different types of bonds. Efficient frontier. This is a piece where I like to spend some time on. In our world, this kind of gets us all excited. Our clients, they really don't care. It's kind of like the mechanic telling the guy, you know, here's what's going on in the hood. They really don't care. But for some clients, this is like really powerful, but there's a simple discussion. Clients want to know, they've never heard of the term efficient frontier. So first of all, when they hear the efficient frontier, well, where am I? Where should I be? Well, we know that anywhere below the efficient frontier, it's not efficient. It's like having a car that's burning way too much oil. You're getting 10 miles to the gallon when you should be getting 20 miles to the gallon. Crap, how do we fix that? Well, you need to get it tuned up, new plugs, and you know, and whatever. And so how do you become efficient? Sometimes when you not only are so efficient, you have your portfolio could be above the line, which in a lot of cases you could be given what's called alpha, or you know, be getting delta, or just having a big bang for the buck, getting more for your money, okay, more return for the risk that you're taking. So how's their portfolio, and what do we recommend? Well, what recommendation did we give? Well, if they're sometimes we have to talk people into taking more risk because they're not going to meet their objectives unless they take on a little more risk. And a little bit risk, meaning, you know, 10% more equities, 20% more equities. Some people, I just met with a client last week, a doctor from IHC is retiring. He's got a little over $3 million. I know what he's got and what he has. He's debt-free. He's taken unnecessary risk. So we said, Jeff, reduce your risk. It's unnecessary to meet your objectives, and he was great with that because he can't even hardly sleep listening to the news and thinking about Europe and fiscal cliff and all these different things. So we toned his allocation down from a growth to a income with moderate growth. Happened to reduce his risk, and we didn't even give up too much of his return. That's the other part, is on the efficient frontier, we could have moved. Kept the same risk and increased his return. In this case, we took on a little bit more risk, but a little bit more return. So there's a number of things that you can do with your clients. This is a page that as they get closer to retirement, this like is music to their ears. This is like a page where you need to slow down, and this is an impressive page because it shows them the cash flow. Where they're, here's their, the Social Security is coming in on the client. He's at 69. This is his spouse's Social Security. There's a pension. There's the gross income, $93,000. Inflow, that's the taxes that are going out. That's their net income. I got the shakes. I have to eat too much sugar. His lifestyle is $150,000 a year. There's he's going to fund some college 529 plans for some grandkids. There's some gifting. What do you think that 26 is? It's annual exclusion, $213,000 for an insurance policy. There's the premium, but we're going to use this as a gifting. There's his charitable contributions. There's his net outflows. They love that page. And so what we want to do is we always want to talk about what is the probability that you're going to deplete your portfolio. That's really a lot of people want to ask is, am I going to run out of money? Well, in this case, this client, there's a 20% probability he's going to deplete his portfolio. That's a pretty low probability. And we're making very conservative assumptions in our, that's after inflation and taxes, that's adjusted probability. This right here, what is the probability of achieving my target amount of money that I want to pass on to my kids? Well, in this case, we made a little move and we took his probability and we increased this probability from 50 to 60. We increased it 10%, 50 to 60% that he's going to meet the objective of passing a certain amount on to his kids. This is the chart that is, this is another system that we have that is very dynamic. All these other charts are kind of like ho-hum to the clients, they like it. But this one thing is we call income positioning or retirement income illustrator. And so we turn the income page I was just showing you a minute ago there, we turned it into colors. So this is another client, by the way. I had to do it because I didn't have the other client in this particular software. But here's their Social Security income. There's their interest income or dividends. And this client had some red. It was short. So we take that red out by doing certain things in his portfolio, increasing his risk, perhaps investing a little bit more, maybe waiting another year to retire. We try different things that takes this red out. And man, I tell you what, they get so engaged when they see that red. Or a lot of our clients, there's no red, there's just a lot of yellow. And then they say, what's the impact if I retire 2 years early? And all of a sudden, you go to this chart. Oh, 82% probability of success. Let me pause here. This is Monte Carlo, we used to use straight line accounting, which is in our professional world, it's more credible and it's more accurate. Monte Carlo. So we've been using Monte Carlo, which is again more conservative and again more accurate. So you have below average, average, or above average. Okay, and so we like to show a client start at below average. If what would it happen? We change it to average, you know, or if we want to be really optimistic, we'd show them what happens. Well, it takes the red out. In some cases, it just adds a whole lot more yellow. But here's an example. Then we instead of color the income, then we flip the chart and say, here's what your assets look like. Okay, this is your qualified account. Here's your taxable monies. Here's your, there's only two colors here. Okay, so we turn their asset and see, is it depleting or is it increasing? In this particular case, when the client got with us, here's what was happening. We made, his ending up with $400,000 left over to his kids, which most clients like to leave hardly anything to the kids and let the kids get the houses and the insurance policies, and they want to use all the assets for the type of lifestyle. They want to maximize their lifestyle. But with a few tweaks of not of manipulating so we just look good, but we introduce things like non-traded real estate investment trust, which increase the probability of the yield and decreases the risk. And we add managed futures and different things to it, add guaranteed annuities with living benefits, and with not taking on necessarily any more risk, but having their portfolio optimized with the same income, they end up with $1 million instead of $400,000. And you know what's fascinating is you sit here and the wife will say, what happens if he retires 2 years early? What does that look like? And all of a sudden, instead of $1 million, they had $700,000. She's thinking, that's good. Retire now, hon. Or let's say they had only $100,000. They said, what happens if he worked a year longer? All of a sudden, it adds $300,000 to the back end. They're thinking, holy cow, I can work one more year. That's worth it to me to have another $200,000 or $300,000 on the back end. Or what happens if we take on a little more risk? What does that really mean? Well, all of a sudden, their portfolio goes from here to here. Or what if we want to spend an additional $20,000 discretion annually? What does that mean? And really, retirement is, in retirement, there's really three phases. Let's say there's 25 years. You had 8, 8, and 8. It's 24, I know. But 8, 8, and 8, it's called go-go, slow-go, and no-go. Go-go is when they do all the traveling and do all the rigorous stuff because they're healthy. And then they you know, slow-go. They don't do as many things. And then we know when they get in their 80s that they really don't go and they no-go. So the reality is, we said instead of spending 20 additional every single year in discretionary, let's go ahead and spend 30, and then let's go 15, and then 5. Go-go, slow-go, and no-go. And we didn't even give up anything here. And a lot of people have the assets to go, and even though they can't go, then they just give away more, or they just do different things. So we always talk about the big risk in retirement, the five big risks, and I'm not going to go over that right now. But really, this is all about providing clarity to our clients, simplicity, and control. I'm telling you, those three words right there, I use them all the time. This is what I want to achieve with you, Chris, and our engagement, as always. I'm not going to complicate your world. I want to simplify your world. I want to give you a sense of simplicity. I want to give you a sense of control. And you know, you're going to see that we're going to be using best-of-class strategies so that you have a confident future. I'm telling you, who doesn't want to hear simplicity? Who doesn't want to hear clarity? Who does not want to hear control, knowing that they're using the best-of-class strategies for a confident future? Who does not want to hear that? Anyway, these are all terms that we hear in our business. But that's really what this is all about. Here's an interesting quote from Moshe Mileski, PhD from York University. I was just in a conference in California 2 months ago. He made this comment. Clients enjoy retirement and live longer knowing that they have predictable and reliable income. What does that mean to us in our world? Fixed or variable annuities with guarantees, or they want to know the pension, they want to have pension-like income. I don't care what they don't care what we call it. They just want to know, I have a predetermined amount of income and I'm going to live longer because of it. That's a fascinating quote. And we all know this, we've heard this for a long time. There's 10,000 people, just under 10,000, that are retiring every single day and will for the next, now it's 18 years, it was 19 years last year, 19 years. That is a tremendous amount of wealth that's transferring and a tremendous amount of opportunities. 15, even 10 years ago, the average IRA was maybe you saw somebody $250,000 in an IRA or 401k. What is the average now? It's closer to $500,000 in an IRA, a combination IRA and 401ks. Telling you what, that's not a bad client to roll over $500,000. Though they're all over. It's like that's very common. Is there anybody that doesn't agree with me on that? Now, obviously, there's a lot of people that make less, but I'm talking about people that are that have had a decent income. These are samples, some of the snapshots of the portfolios, of the reporting, their the historical rates of return. I did this presentation. This presentation was done in 2010, and so this is some numbers you can see in 2009, the last year, prior year, 18.9, So we've taken in, so this is how I end the meeting. I kind of have discovered what the clients, through this meeting and through our review, what their concerns are. We know everybody's worried about volatility. Everybody's worried about inflation, rising interest rates, what happens there. Particularly with bond positions. What's going on with the presidential election? What does that mean? Europe, that's a big fear for a lot of people. We know there's gridlock in Washington, D.C. And then the fiscal cliff, which is clients are starting to hear that in the news. It's becoming kind of overused, and we're kind of like getting fiscal cliff fatigue. But nonetheless, all these are fatiguing. But we know this is their worry. So what is the solution? Well, For volatility, it's a well-diversified portfolio. For hyperinflation, it's treasuries, inflation-protected treasuries, REITs, emerging markets. For rising interest rates, it's dividend fixed income or certain sectors. For declining dollar, it's international emerging markets. For government spending, it's tax-conscious investing, diversified equity portfolio. And then you know going into the meeting what you're really trying to accomplish. You pretty much know where you're going to take them when you're done. You know their concerns. You know the client pretty good. And you're going to learn some new ones. But by the end of the meeting, you're going to have your plan, action plan. And there may be 3 bullet points here. Maybe 5 bullet points here. It may be related to insurance, 529 plans. It may be related to changing their allocation. It may be related to the next gifting and the crummy letter that could be going out. Or they could be related to a new insurance policy. It could be, you know, titling. There's a host of different things, but you kind of know what they are. And then we end up reminding them of our philosophy and what we're doing here, being compensated for the risk, being positioned for a high degree of success relative to their goals, and not be exposed to avoidable catastrophes. So that's my presentation. I'll end where I started, and that is this. Why do you need a good annual review process for your insurance or your investment clients? Because it's a great marketing. Doing good stuff for your good clients. They stay with you, give you more money. It's very easy to get referrals, but there's a proper way to do it. And I showed you one thing that worked for me. That's the lunch and the sandwiches, asking some 5 questions. And if you don't earn the referrals, you can't ask for it. But half the time, 70% of the time, you're positioned where they're going to give you 1 or 2 or 3 names. And they're going to send their buddies an email, say, hey, you know, you probably like me. I had everything done. I had this guy referred to me. His name's Steven. Meet with him. He's going to call you. I highly recommend you meet with him. And you probably got everything done, but still meet with him. He sends him an email, makes a phone call, and that's all I asked him to do. And not all my clients do it. But what if only a third or half do? Those clients who refer you to are all fluent. Okay? So why do I have a good annual review process? Because I keeps my clients loyal. It's good goodwill. Get renewal fees. And for doing this process, a lot of times I get $2,100 is what I charge 3/4 of my clients to do this annual review process. They have no problem paying it. No problem. It's not an issue. $2,100. Provides them and me clarity, simplicity, control. Gives me anticipation of what I know is upcoming as an advisor and for my team. Spreads the work out over the year. Allows me to keep promises. Genders loyalty. Keeps my assets under management, so as I keep them coming in, they stay and they build. And I know that hopefully in 7 to 10 years, they double just because of the market, let alone new contributions. I stay referable. Sets the stage for the next level planning. It gives them and me a consistency of experience. It takes my A game, and I always am elevating my A game. And I also stay compliant savvy, so I never get swiped with compliance. So that's my presentation. Hope you have a great weekend. We're done.